Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, welcome back to Basketball Conference, the ACC football podcast. My name is Joey Weaver. He is Mike McDaniel. Mike, week seven in the books. It was a short week, but a dense week. I thought some good games in the ACC. Look forward to talking about them here. How are you doing? Did you get to watch any of them?
Good is a relative term when you're a Virginia Tech fan.
A couple of these, calling them good games is, might take a little bit of explaining or a little bit of context.
Yeah, I think in some ways you're doing Virginia Tech Miami a disservice by calling it a good game.
I mean, it was a one-score game at the end in the fourth quarter. We'll get there. We'll get there.
Battle of who's worse. So
that's right. And that in and of itself might be a good game. Mike, let's get into it. We have four games to recap here once again. We will start with the one ranked-on-ranked matchup, as we all knew it would be at the start of the season. The number 18, Syracuse Orange, 24. The number 15, NC State Wolfpack, 9. We got news Saturday morning. I guess it was maybe Thursday or so that we found out we weren't sure that Devin Leary was going to play. Saturday morning, we get news. Not only was he not going to play, but his season is over. He was going in to have surgery on, I believe it was a torn pec. Is that right?
Yep.
So, Devin Leary, torn pectoral. Unclear if he will come back to NC State next year, if he has eligibility remaining, or if he will be gone trying to play on Sundays. But the Wolfpack will be without him the remainder of the year. And Mike, that was something that we had talked about a little bit with him, even over the first six games of this season, is NC State's offense, a little bit of a, they could be efficient, but they were really not explosive, and they were really not, like, consistently pushing the ball down the field, picking up yards in chunks, running up the score on anybody. And without him, and with Jack Chambers now mainly behind center, that did not get solved here, as Syracuse's defense, with just an absolute smothering effort here on Saturday.
Yeah. Let's start with Dave Doran, right? He says, okay, Devin Leary could be gone anywhere from 1 to 6 weeks, is what he said. Well, we knew he was lying.
He was day to day.
Yeah. We're all just one doctor's appointment away, as they say. As we get older, Joey, that's kind of the... And turns out Devin Leary was one doctor's appointment away. So he's out for the year, Joey.
He is no longer 1 to 6 weeks.
Yes, he's on IR, so to speak. So, I think that's probably the last we see of Devin Leary at NC State. I mean, he's got the COVID year of eligibility remaining next year, the sixth year if he wants it. I mean, I think he's probably got Sunday aspirations. I think he's a Sunday-type quarterback, right? I think he can play professionally. So it's probably the last we see of him at NC State, I would assume, which, not the greatest end to your career. And for NC State, in terms of what this means for them moving forward, the outlook is kind of bleak offensively, at least in the passing game, right? I think we saw that on Saturday. Now, Syracuse has a good defense, right? A very good defense, actually. One of the best defenses in the ACC. And that's a really bad time. Very good. And that's a really bad time to have to break in a guy like Jack Chambers, who, of course, took over in relief a week ago, helped NC State to a victory over Florida State. But we kind of know what Jack Chambers is, I think, through a game and change, right? He's a former walk-on quarterback. He is definitely a better runner than passer. And NC State, which, to your point, Joey, wasn't necessarily proficient or efficient in the passing game like we thought they would be coming into the year with Devin Leary, certainly is not efficient or proficient in the passing game without Devin Leary. And Jack Chambers, I think, moving forward anyway, things are going to be looking a little bit different offensively, right? I think what we saw last night is, number one, Jack Chambers is going to be rolling out a lot, right? A lot. Devin Leary, stand back there in the pocket, sling it around. That's not going to be the offensive game plan with Jack Chambers, which makes sense. You know, try to make it as easy on him as possible in the rollout game. Have him be primarily high, low, throw it away. You know, have those be the reads. And, you know, try to get a little bit of something out of the passing game, but really kind of ride your running game and your defense to victories and kind of grind things out the rest of the way. I think that's going to be the game plan, you know, for the foreseeable future, or at least until Jack Chambers gets comfortable. And, you know, Saturday, he was not really comfortable in the passing game. 18 of 30 passing for 160 yards. He looked okay, but clearly not Devin Leary in the pocket. Now, running the football, he had 19 carries for 58 yards. Definitely, I mean, not great rushing numbers, but, you know, it's clear through this game and then the Florida State game when we saw him in relief last week that he's definitely more comfortable with his legs. And going up against the Syracuse defense, like, you don't want to be that one-dimensional, right? And I think what ended up happening in this game is, like, NC State really couldn't generate much offensively, and then Syracuse just kind of grinded it out until the dam broke, right? And that Sean Tucker touchdown run late is kind of what, you know, really helped Syracuse pull away. So, I mean, this is Sean Tucker's best rushing game of the year, like 14 carries, 98 yards. He was averaging 7 yards a rush. This is by far his best rushing game of the year.
I saw that on Twitter,
Yeah, he let you know, didn't he? He let you know. He's running behind an interesting offensive line, let's put it that way. And so this was his best rushing game
of the
year.
Everyone's favorite running back and AP beat writer.
Yes, that's right. And he writes in ways that even third graders can understand, which makes it helpful. So that's good.
It was close. I mean, and it was just sort of a slugfest of sorts. I mean, it was 10-3 at halftime. It was 17-6 at the end of the third quarter. And it was, I mean, NC State's defense put up a really spirited effort, I felt like. There were a couple drives that Syracuse got into scoring territory, and NC State either forced a field goal or even created a turnover. These two teams combined for 5 possessions in the second half of this game. I mean, it was slow. It was, I don't know, man. If you thought that, like, Tennessee-Alabama was like the perfect football game on Saturday, 52-49, you know, 100-plus points, like all these yards, everything. If you thought that was like the way that football should be played, you would have hated this game.
Right.
Like, this was – I mean, Syracuse did rack up almost 400 yards of offense but had 24 points to show for it. I don't know. It was – I thought both defenses played really, really well. Very spirited effort. NC State's defense did their absolute damnedest to keep NC State in the game. You're correct that the Sean Tucker touchdown run late that touchdown run late really was kind of the backbreaker, because at that point it was only an 8-point game. It was 17-9. Syracuse gets the ball back with about 6 minutes left, and it's like, if NC State can get a stop, get the ball back, they have a chance to go in and score and tie the game and send it to overtime. But instead, Syracuse scores a touchdown. It's 24-9, and then NC State goes down and basically runs out the rest of the clock. The final 2:20, they get down into field goal range, but that wasn't good enough. So you're correct. I mean, Jack Chambers more of a runner than a passer. It's pretty clear. He did go 18 of 30, but not really a whole lot of daring deep throws. Not that that was something that Devin Leary was having a lot of success with either. And that's, to me, speaks a little bit more to kind of some receiver concerns, I think. You know, nobody to really take the top off the defense.
Yep.
We did have an MJ Morris sighting for the Wolfpack. There was a drive that he came in and played a few had a few plays, basically, but I think it was like a 3-and-out in the second quarter. He's a guy that, again, I think if Devin Leary were having more success and you needed somebody who could throw the ball a little bit better, you might give MJ Morris more of a look down the stretch here. And obviously this is probably about the best defense that they'll play moving forward. But MJ Morris might be a guy you'd go to. But I think if it is really a thing where, like, you're just not going to have guys that are going to be able to get a lot of separation and make downfield plays happen, then forget it. Don't mess with, you know, a true freshman in Morris. And just go with the more veteran guy in Chambers and see what that looks like, I guess, moving forward. But it does feel like, I mean, injuries starting to pile up. We didn't have any Demi Sumo-Kangbe. I'm confident I said that wrong. He did not play in this game for NC State.
You didn't have a
what? It just seems like this is going to turn into a bit of a loss.
I was going to say, you didn't have a what?
Demi Sumo-Kangbe. I think I said that right. DSG? No, DSK? DSK. Once again, it is late. And anyways. Yeah, we didn't have him in this game. No Devin Leary, obviously. It just seems like injuries are piling up for NC State. And, you know, for a year that you really thought this might be the year that you get over the top, it is not looking that way. This is not going in a way that makes you think, like, oh, yeah, this is our year. It is not. As you mentioned, I mean, Garrett Schrader, Sean Tucker combined 30 carries for 179 yards and a touchdown. This is, as you mentioned, Sean Tucker's best day of the year running the ball. Aronde Gadsden, 8 catches for 141 and 2 scores. He was a huge deal for Syracuse here. He made big plays in the passing game all day. The Tucker-Schrader index, those guys between Sean Tucker runs, Garrett Schrader runs, and Sean Tucker catches, combined to make up over 73% of the plays for Syracuse that did not end up in an incomplete pass. So, once again, only really two guys you got to defend, but honestly, Aronde Gadsden, maybe defend him too, because that guy made NC State pay on a couple of occasions.
Ralph Russo from the Associated Press said that Aronde Gadsden is, you know, not an All-American. He's not an All-ACC player, probably. And with all that being said, like, he's probably one of the most important players for Syracuse because at times it feels like he's the only receiver on the field. Yep, that sounds accurate to me. Mm-hmm. When I watch Syracuse play right now, it's still like a very Garrett Schrader and Sean Tucker heavy offense. But when Schrader's throwing to an actual receiver, it's basically Gadsden or nobody, right? Or Gadsden or Sean Tucker, right? That's it. But mm-hmm. a true wide receiver, it's Gadsden or bust. I mean, that's kind of where they're at in the receiving core right now.
If you add up all of the carries and all of the catches made by everyone else on the Syracuse roster, not named Garrett Schrader, Sean Tucker, or Aronde Gadsden, do you know how many combined carries and catches everyone else on the roster had, Mike, in this game?
It's going to be less than 5.
It would be 4. You are correct. There were 4 plays where the ball went to and got to somebody other than those 3 guys. It is wild to me. Just continues to be wild. I will say our favorite AP reporter, one Sean Tucker. Saturday we won Syracuse 24, NC State 9. I'm pleased with the outcome of the game and how our fans rocked the dome. 6-0, but we're not done. I'm pleased with my performance, but there's more I can do. The grind never stops, nor will number 34. 14 carries for 98 yards and a touchdown. 4 receptions for 14 yards.
Please.
Well done, Sean Tucker. Good reporting.
Well done.
Appreciate it.
Shout out producer Scott.
Mike? Is that good?
Yes, I did. I did. Well done.
that was a producer Scott idea, and it was a brilliant one. Well done. All right. I think that's all I got here. Syracuse really, I think, a very good defense. An offense that is, like, good enough, we'll say. I'm still trying to figure out Syracuse's offense. You can tell these like weekly recaps turn into like therapy sessions for me as I'm just like trying to talk through my feelings about Syracuse's offense. I can't figure it out. It seems like it shouldn't work, but it does. Like, it's good enough. I can't figure it out, Mike. This is a thing that I like get distracted at work thinking about, trying to figure out why does Syracuse's offense work. It's ridiculous.
It's basically just shower thoughts.
Yeah. Yeah.
What's going on with the
Syracuse
offense?
Yeah, that whole meme of, like, you know, the man and woman laying in bed, and the woman's like, I bet he's thinking about other women. And I'm just like, why does Syracuse's offense work? That's pretty much what's going on.
Yeah. There. Yeah, why can't anybody stop it?
it's not good, but I guess it's good enough. I guess it's good enough. Story of my life. All right. Syracuse 24, NC State 9. Anything else, Mike?
Nope.
All right. We will move on. Number 4, Clemson 34, Florida State 28. We were talking about this a little bit on Saturday, and I think if the only thing you know about this game is the final score, it was not this close. It was not. It was 24-14 at halftime, but even then it wasn't that close. Clemson, the other orange team, they were pretty much in control of this game following probably the first drive of the game by Florida State. They marched it down on the script, 9 plays, 75 yards, touchdown. After that, I guess they did take a 14-7 lead at one point, but it just felt like Clemson, especially in the middle of this game, that middle eight territory, Clemson went 17-0, I think, in that time frame, and that was really a huge difference here. Clemson looking good, looking complete, maybe not as dangerous as they once were and as dominant, and a team that I think could really hang with an Ohio State or an Alabama. But they look really good, and I'm honestly not sure who's left on their schedule that's going to really give them a game in terms of possibly beating them. I think Clemson is looking playoff good right now.
Yeah, they're playoff good for sure. And the thing is, like, if Clemson slips up, they're probably not going to the playoff because I'm not sure their schedule is strong enough the rest of the way. They have Notre Dame, right, that was supposed to be like this quality non-conference opponent. Notre Dame just lost to Stanford. They have now lost to two FBS teams this year who literally have not beaten any other FBS teams other than Notre Dame. Marshall beat Notre Dame in week two, and they don't have an FBS win since. And then, unfortunately for Notre Dame, and then Stanford.
In the Sun Belt.
Yes. Yes, and they're in the Sun Belt. And then there's Stanford, who, you know, in most years the Pac-12 plays like the Sun Belt, but not this year. Stanford goes into South Bend last night and beats Notre Dame, and Stanford also does not have another FBS one this year. So that's not a great look for Notre Dame. Clemson is going to roll through the rest of their schedule. They're going to roll through it. I look at this game in particular. It's like a three-act play, right? I thought Florida State played well early here. I was particularly impressed with Florida State's offensive line. I thought they held up pretty well in the first, I don't know, let's say 20 to 25 minutes of game time, right? I did feel like, you know, Florida State kind of was able to, you know, keep Clemson's pass rush at bay. I thought Jordan Travis got comfortable early in the game. I thought Florida State was running the ball okay early in the game. And then the middle eight happened, right? So last 4 minutes mm-hmm. of the first half, first 4 minutes of the second half, Clemson kicked a field goal with just under 2 minutes to go. In the first half, right? They kick a field goal to make it 17-14. That was Clemson's first lead of the game, right? After Clemson
takes the
lead there. And
I couldn't believe they got the ball back after that.
Well, Miles Murphy, strip sack of Jordan Travis. They get the ball back. A few plays later, DJ Uiagalelei, touchdown run, right? Okay, so now mm-hmm. all of a sudden, it goes from 14-14 to 24-14 going into halftime. Clemson gets the ball to start the second half. Florida State kicks off. Will Shipley returns at 69 yards. Very nice return. And then on the very next play, DJ Uiagalelei hits Allen on a 31-yard touchdown pass. Again, utilizing the tight ends is something that Clemson is doing quite well over the last month or so. That was the ball game. Clemson went from 14-14 to 31-14, and that was it. That was the game, right? And Florida State had a nice little late comeback where they scored a couple times. And, you know, Dabo after the game wasn't really thrilled with, you know, how Clemson closed in the last like 5 or 6 minutes. And Dabo specifically referenced on the field in the post-game interview with ABC. He just said, you know, fans are leaving the stadium. Meanwhile, Florida State's still playing. And that's a testament to Mike Norvell. Again, this is not an indictment of Florida State. A couple things went their way, went poorly there. They didn't cover well on a kick return coming out of halftime. They had the strip sack fumble late in the first half. So it's really just a couple plays that, you know, kind of show how teams like Clemson gain separation from teams like Florida State, right? And I do think that Florida State, even though they're kind of in a rough stretch right now, is three consecutive losses against, you know, a Wake Forest team that I thought really just played better than Florida State the entire game. NC State, which I think Florida State should have won, and then this game, which I wasn't thinking Florida State would win. You know, it's a tough stretch, but I think Mike Norvell still has things going in the right direction. The fact that Dabo, after the game, came out and said that, you know, the kids are playing hard for Norvell, and they don't quit, and it just looks like a different team with how they're playing.
Mm-hmm.
And Dabo totally acknowledged that Florida State's heading in a really good direction. And I think you and I are kind of in agreement, even though they've hit a little bit of a rough patch on their season here with the last three games.
I mean, they hit a rough patch with losses, a 10-point loss to Wake Forest, a 2-point loss to NC State, and now a 6-point loss to Clemson. And like you mentioned, I mean, they kept playing. They were down
right.
20 points, you know, with 11 minutes left or whatever, and they go down and score touchdowns in their final two drives and make it competitive and give themselves a chance to, you know, to get an onside kick and do something there at the very end. You know, it's I think that's a pretty big improvement. And you look at the competition, I mean, the really disappointing thing, honestly, is that they lost that NC State game, because that was a game
yeah.
that they had in hand. They had a lead for a while, but then even after they had the lead, it was like you had the ball in field goal range with a chance to win the game, and you turned it over. Like,
right.
there were missed opportunities there that, you know, they could be 5-2 right now. And I agree that they are improved, and they're going to win a lot more games this year. They will be favored
yeah.
in almost every game they have left, I would imagine. They have Georgia Tech at home in 2 weeks, and then at Miami, at Syracuse, home against Louisiana, home against Florida. The trip to Syracuse is the one that maybe they're not favored in.
Right.
I think they'll be favored against Florida in Tallahassee. I mean, and
yeah.
I'll probably pick them to beat both Miami and Florida. Like, I think this Florida State team is really improved and is getting better, even if the results aren't showing it on the scoreboard. You just got to realize who they're playing against.
Yeah, and I'm not sure there's a game the rest of the year where I will not be picking Florida State. Like, I think,
mm-hmm.
you know, when I look at the rest of their schedule, like, I think Florida State is at least on par or better than every single team the rest of the way on the schedule. So,
mm-hmm.
I mean, like you said, they'll be favored in a lot of those games, and we'll kind of see how it shakes out. But I think Florida State's heading in a good direction. This feels like an 8-4 type football team. We've been saying that for about a month now. It still feels that way, even with the last three games going the way that they have.
Yeah, I mean, if you told me they went 4-1 over their final five games, I'd believe you.
Oh, yeah, 100%.
So, I will say Florida State, the one thing that they do kind of lack, I think, at a number of positions is depth. They're a team that it's like their starters are all very good, but it's still a situation where, like, Jared Verse goes out, and the next two drives that he's out, that's like all the announced crew can talk about is, well, Jared Verse still on the sidelines, and like it's things like this where it's not like, well, now look who's replacing him and who's making plays. It's, oh crap, there's a hole there because Jared Verse is out. Like,
right.
I think that's still happening a little bit with Florida State, but that just takes time to cover up and to recruit over, I think. But for the most part, I think they're you know, staying reasonably healthy. There have definitely been some injuries here or there that have impacted them, but as a reasonably healthy team, They will continue to play well, I think, down the stretch here. So, Clemson, as mentioned, I mean, I think they are good enough to beat everyone on their schedule. They're good enough to win the ACC for sure. I don't know how well it will hold up if and when they make the playoff. But if they are 13-0 in ACC champions, they will make the playoff. That is
yep.
pretty much a for sure thing at this point, especially with the logo on the helmet. That doesn't hurt. But I mean, they are good, and they are better than I kind of expected them to be. I think the offense continues to improve little by little, week over week. DJU still maybe not the dynamic, just incredible player that we saw from Deshaun Watson and Trevor Lawrence, and they're not lighting up scoreboards quite the same way that Clemson offenses of old did, but they are effective and they're efficient, and him using his legs really adds an extra element to the offense that they didn't have last year. And you know, we've said some of this before. I don't know what else to say. Probably still some deficiencies to some degree in the Clemson receiving core, although not as problematic right now as it was last year
around.
Especially
they're coming around mm-hmm. a little bit. And again, like, DJ's utilizing the tight ends well too. I mean, that's really been dating back to the Wake Forest game. It feels like they're really starting to get more out of both the receiving core, the tight ends, and, you know, this running game with Will Shipley. Like, that was a Will Shipley game last night, right, where they were just going to mm-hmm. give him the ball, you know, 15 or so. Let's see, how many rushes did he have last night? They gave him the ball 20 times, 20 for 121. I mean, they were perfectly content with giving him the ball, having him run right down Florida State's throat and just have, you know, see if the Seminoles could stop him, right? And Florida State has, Clemson has gone from, not Florida State, Clemson has gone from a team that lights up scoreboards, like you said, to now playing smash mouth complimentary football the way that Alabama used to play under Saban, right? Where they're perfectly content with just running the ball at you like 30, 35 times and then having their defense just kind of sit over on the sideline, rest up, and then come at you on the other side, right? They're playing really good complimentary football right now. And I don't, there are certain matchups in a college football playoff that I don't think would go particularly well for Clemson, namely like playing Tennessee, for example, or playing Ohio State that, you know, I think at full strength, Ohio State can hang 50 on you, right? If Jaxon Smith-Njigba is healthy and Travion Henderson's healthy and, you know, you have C.J. Stroud be C.J. Stroud, like,
oh, with Ohio State or Tennessee, you thought Wake Forest receivers made Clemson's secondary look bad.
Yeah.
Oh, my gosh. Like, that would be just a hilarity. Like,
yeah. And to Clemson's credit.
Good job, Joey. Good words.
Yeah. And to Clemson's credit, like, the secondary has played better the last few weeks, but they also haven't played, like, a receiving core quite like Wake Forest since then either, right? So
that's a phrase.
That's the other side. It's a phrase, but it's accurate. But I mean, but there are other matchups where, like, you know, if Clemson gets into a game with Georgia, I feel a little bit better this year about Clemson going into that game than I would have a year ago, right? So, and that's not to say
I did
think
play
Clemson
Georgia
would,
a year ago.
Well, and that's not to say like I would feel comfortable with Clemson necessarily beating Georgia, but I think that Clemson is better suited to kind of get in the mud now and play that type of game after kind of that gap year they had last year. This Clemson team's just improved. Like, they're improved. They're better offensively. They're every bit as good defensively. I think Dabo's kind of the coaching staff thing was maybe a bit overblown. I mean,
maybe a bit.
I mean, I think everybody went full panic. I think people went full panic on Elliott and Venables leaving, which I get, but like offense looks better with no Tony Elliott. And defense, I think, you know, there were some times in the Wake Forest game in particular where you and I were texting and we were like, man, I think they missed Brent Venables here. But they've kind of weathered the storm a little bit, and they seem to be playing a bit better. So I don't know. I think jury's still out on that a little bit, but I do think that we probably overestimated that a tad as well.
I think that's honestly where you're going to see it is in a playoff type of situation is I do think that this staff is capable of getting outcoached in a way that they were not with Brent Venables. And I mean, there were, you can cherry pick a time or two. You know, I think there was an Ohio State game from maybe the COVID year where they just boat raced Clemson. And it's like, yeah, I mean, you got outcoached. All the like quick sugar huddle stuff, formation to the boundary, like blah, 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 like some of these things that you heard, like, yeah, they got outcoached in that game. But I mean, if they were getting outcoached more than like once a year, something was crazy. I think this staff is still capable of getting out-coached. It's just that there's not a whole lot of anybody that's capable of out-coaching them and out-talenting them.
Right.
I think they're doing fine with mediocre coaching right now. And then the problem is going to be when you get into a playoff situation where you get equally or more talented rosters and as good or better coaches. That's where you're just going to – you're not going to really have a chance. And so I'm not, like, fully ready to just walk back my take that that failing to hire from the outside is not a good thing and is going to kind of make Clemson a little more mortal. I do think that's going to have some issues, and I think that's also part of the reason that you're not seeing Clemson's offense totally light up scoreboards. Is I don't think that the coaching is really truly brilliant there. It's fine, and you know, the play calling and the schemes, it's fine, and you have better players than most everyone you're playing at this point in the year. So great. You're going to win a number of games, and you're going to get to the playoff, and then you're just going to get stepped on.
I mostly agree, although I do think the offense is better this year now that Tony Elliott's gone. So
hi, Virginia fans.
And it's not... By God.
Virginia's awesome.
Oh, wait, what was that? Sorry. Oh, this again.
My C K
E Y
M O U S E. Yeah. Yeah. What I was saying is that things are looking a little bit better offensively for Clemson. I know it's not like this is college football and it's not black and white, like where, oh, this guy left, so all of a sudden the offense is better and that's got to be the reason why. Like, mm-hmm. probably not entirely the case, but like Tony Elliott, we talked about this last week. Tony Elliott showed up at UVA, now Brandon Armstrong's worse. So what gives, right?
Noticeably.
And
yep.
Tony Elliott leaves Clemson and DJU's now better?
Mm-hmm.
I mean,
Huh.
And Dabo said, that? I mean, Dabo has said, like, they've been better around DJ this year. And I totally agree. Like, they've been a lot better. Like, they're running the ball a lot better. Shipley's been really good. Not that he was bad last year, but he's been a lot better this year. Offensive line mm-hmm. starting to play a little bit better. Receiving core starting to play a bit better around DJ. So, I mean, they are certainly playing better around him, but it does look different than a year ago. And they're getting to a point now too where they're like getting more comfortable in the vertical passing game with DJ. Like, he made a heck of a throw last night. He kind of stepped out of a sack and had like a guy wrapped around his legs almost, and he just, you know, it was what, a 70-yard touchdown pass he threw or whatever it was. I mean, he's that was a big time throw. So
he's pretty
definitely,
man, from a physical standpoint and
unreal
ability to make some of those throws, like totally off balance and everything. It's crazy.
One of the top quarterbacks in the country in big time throw rate, and about once or twice a game you see him make like an unreal throw where he's just like, they look like they have him down, and a guy breaks loose in the secondary and DJ sees it, and like a flick at the wrist, that ball's going like on a rope, like 40 or 50 yards. And we did not see that last year. We saw it in the COVID year when he replaced Trevor Lawrence in South Bend. We saw that. We're starting to see it now a bit more, like once or twice a game, where you're like, man, there aren't many quarterbacks in the country who can make that throw.
Yep. Yep. Clemson's good again, for sure. They are certainly approaching the Clemson standard, I would say. So, you know, jury's out on where that takes them. But I think at this point it's fair to expect that they will be a playoff team again come, you know, I guess December, when we find out what that final four is.
They were a full step removed from, well, conservatively speaking, right? They were a full step removed from, like, national champion, elite team status a year ago. And now I think they're, like, half a step removed, where, like, they're really good. They'll make the playoff. But Clemson's almost in like the Notre Dame playoff mold, where they're like going to beat the hell out of everybody on their schedule. Clearly, they're a really good team. But then when they start playing like Bama, Ohio State, Tennessee, Georgia, like those types of teams, it's like, are we sure they can match up? Like, those are that's kind of the question I think we have with Clemson this year. So I think they're kind of a half step removed from where they've been, but definitely in a better spot than they were a year ago.
Yep, absolutely. That's all I got here, Mike. Anything else?
We had to go long on this game because there's more to get to that I don't really want to discuss in too much detail. In one game in particular.
Trying to put it off. You can't get away from it, Mike. It's coming. Number four, Clemson 34, Florida State 28. We do have two more games to discuss. Before we do that, two things real quick. Number one, everybody here has homework. You had homework. A few people have done their homework, and I really appreciate it. If you have not, your homework is to go find Basketball Conference on YouTube and hit the subscribe button. We are approaching 100 subscribers, at which point we will have a dedicated URL to give to you to go find us at. If you have not done it, please do it. Use your parents' accounts, use your kids' accounts, whatever you got to do. Get us to 100 subscribers, and that's our big target, our big goal for this season. Maybe if we do it by the end of the season, Mike, we'll do something kind of crazy on a live stream or something like that. But we are currently, as you listen to this.
what are you signing me up for? Is that, I mean,
Mike, it's for the content. Content never sleeps, and neither do we.
That's true. That's true. I just don't want to end up on like, I want to end up on like page 6 of some blacklisted site, you know? So anyway, continue.
for the second time at least. Anyways, go find us on YouTube, Basketball Conference, and hit that subscribe button, and we'll come up with something that we do if y'all can get us to 100 subscribers and get us a dedicated URL to send you to. That's number one. Number two is we need to remind you about section103.com. It is the internet's premier place to find all sorts of wonderful Georgia Tech apparel. I'm wearing mine right now. Did I put it on for the live stream? Yes, I did. But is it super comfortable, and do I love wearing it? Yes, I do. And yes, it is. Georgia Tech was on a bye week this week, but they are playing this Thursday night. We will come back and preview week 8 soon. But if you need something to wear to the game, go to section103.com and use promo code GOACC for 10% off your first order. They have all sorts of wonderful apparel, t-shirts, hoodies, sweatshirts, everything that you need to go support Georgia Tech. It is very comfortable. It is high quality. It is great looking. They've got performance wear. They've got proper just, you know, cotton, normal t-shirts, something for men, women, children, something for the whole family. So go check it out. They've got the official Tech gold. They've got all the official word marks, everything. It is wonderful. I love mine. You will love yours. Mike even loves his. So
I do.
Go check that out at section103.com. Yeah. Bobby Dodd Stadium, everyone's happy place here. That's the nice thing. Once again, use promo code GOACC at section103.com to get 10% off your first order on all sorts of wonderful performance wear and other apparel to support Georgia Tech. Go do that.
Yep.
Mike, North Carolina. Oh, sorry, go ahead.
Oh, no, I have nothing to say. Continue.
Good. North Carolina 38, Duke 35. This game was wild. It was very back and forth. I think both teams kind of seized control in different moments and then gave it back up in others. Very, very back and forth. A really good rivalry game. Ultimately, the victory bell comes out painted powder blue, Carolina blue. What's the proper term there? I don't really know. This was a lot of fun. I hope you got a chance to watch it, Mike.
I did. It was one of several late games at, well, yeah, 8 o'clock start. It's late for me. I have a kid now. It was one of the several late games I was paying some particular attention to. A lot of points, Joey. Like, a lot of points. And Duke mm-hmm. was in a position to win this game. They have to be. You and I were texting about this with Scott. They have to be absolutely sick that they weren't able to close this game out. Absolutely sick. And
yep.
You give Carolina life late. Against that, you know, with that offense, that's tough, right? And Drake May ultimately leads a touchdown drive, and, you know, Carolina wins that game. Like, you can't just continuously give that offense opportunities. And that was the biggest thing. Duke's defense didn't hold up particularly well, because I don't think Duke's defense is really any good. But offensively, I thought they played well enough to make Carolina look bad, which you only need to be like halfway competent to make Carolina's defense look bad, right? And I thought Duke mm-hmm. made Carolina's defense look terrible. But the biggest takeaway for me, Joey, is that Carolina's in the driver's seat in the Coastal, right? Like, I think they're the team to, well, technically, mm-hmm. excuse me, your Georgia Tech Yellow Jackets technically are the driver's seat in the Coastal. They control their own destiny.
Control their own destiny.
Yeah. Okay, tough, they control their own destiny. Yes, they control their own destiny. But Carolina, I think, is in the driver's seat. Like, they're going to outscore pretty much everybody they play the rest of the way in conference play. And
yep.
defensively, they're awful. They are awful defensively. But offensively, there aren't really many teams left that can score with them. And because of that, I think they're kind of going to be a tough out in the Coastal rest of the way.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, Carolina's defense, I tweeted this out at one point in the second half.
They're awful.
I hope those guys go in after the game every week to watch film to see, you know, what did they do right, what did they do wrong. And their film from the game is just set to Yakety Sacks on repeat. And if you're hearing that and you're like, what's Yakety Sacks? I don't know that. Yes, you do.
Yes, you do.
Yakety Sacks sounds something like this. Yeah, so I hope this is the music that UNC's defense watches their highlights to, because my goodness, the angles, the technique, the tackling, I mean, everything is just, it is hilariously bad at times. And I say at times, it's pretty much all the time. Pretty ridiculous. So
I mean, they let Riley Leonard rush for 130 yards in this game.
Yeah, on 14 carries. And that's including a sack. So Yeah, Riley Leonard. Riley Leonard, by the way, made a couple of just enormous throws in this game. A few, like, just gorgeous, impressive throws. That guy can play, man. He's good.
Yeah, I think your exact text was, he can go. That's correct.
Yeah, that guy can go.
Yeah.
Not like, oh, he can go. He can get out of here. It's more like a, oh, that guy can go.
Yeah,
so he can play. Important to get the tone on that. I will say the really critical moment in this game really was, I think, most of the fourth quarter, honestly. UNC gets the ball down 35-31. And at this point, this is probably where I should admit to the people that I had a ticket on UNC to score, or I guess UNC team total over 37.5. So I need a touchdown.
I had game total
messed
over.
Around on offense.
Yeah, okay, I had game total over. So
UNC
important.
Was up 31-21 after they scored a touchdown with 4 minutes left in the third quarter. From there, they went four plays, negative 4 yards, missed field goal when they took over on the very short field. They went three and out after that, and then they had a drive. They were moving the ball. They got into field goal range, and Drake May like tried to throw a pass and got interrupted in a way that I thought he was going to get a Brady Tuck rule, like arm moving forward, it's an incomplete pass, but they went back and reviewed it and decided it was a fumble, so they lost that. So Duke gets the ball at their own 38-yard line with 7.5 minutes left and proceeds to execute just an impressive 4-minute drive that took up a full 5 minutes. I'll check the math on that later. They work it all the way down, and they've got 3rd and 2 on the North Carolina 11. There is a run up the middle by Jordan Waters. They convert easily. It's called back for an illegal shift. So now it's 3rd and 7 from the 16. Riley Leonard throws a gorgeous touchdown pass to Jalen Calhoun. It's a beautiful catch, and Duke's going to win the game. Called back, I believe it was like hands to the face, some sort of, oh no, it was a chop block. It was a chop block was what it was on the play. So that gets called back. So now it's 3rd and 22 from the 31, and they basically kind of ran a little QB draw, set up for a field goal, and then they missed it. And it was like you had multiple chances basically to salt the game away, and then you missed the field goal that would have at least put you up 7 points. And wouldn't you know it, Mike, North Carolina gets the ball back with a little over 2 minutes left. 9 plays, 74 yards, and a touchdown, including the game-winning touchdown there with about 16 seconds left, where Antoine Green almost certainly didn't step out of bounds, but he might have.
Man,
he
that
very
heel.
Well might have stepped out of bounds before catching the ball.
That heel was out of bounds. But,
yeah,
it
wasn't obvious enough to overturn it on review, but, man, it sure looked like he did.
It was obvious enough to me, but hey, I was holding a game total over and you were holding a Carolina team total over. So by all indications, mm-hmm. I mean, he was in bounds by our
I think I texted the group, praise the ACC refs, which if you need to know how bad things were getting, how dire the situation was, that's where we were at.
Yeah. I feel like if you're asking for ACC refs to bail you out, we're in a dire, dire situation.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, really good win for North Carolina. Duke, I mean, that's a tough loss where they played well. They had a chance to win. I really thought Carolina was going to run away with it a little bit because, like I mentioned, I mean, they scored that touchdown late in the third and they were up 10 points. And the way that they were rolling, this is the thing I need to figure out about Carolina's offense is it feels like it's like a perfect duality, Mike. And what I mean is that they're either like driving the length of the field and scoring touchdowns, or they're like going three and out.
Right.
There's almost no drives where it's like, oh yeah, they picked up a couple first downs and then they punted. No, it's like either they went out there, looked like they had no idea what they were doing and immediately punted, or they just like shred the defense. They got 2 first downs, just rolled all the way to the end zone. And it's kind of bizarre to watch that way where you're like, oh, that's a great offense. And then they have like 3 straight drives where they get a grand total of like 4 yards. And it's like, wait, where did that go? What happened?
Right. Yeah. It's an up and down watching experience.
It's an experience, that's for sure.
Yeah.
Josh Downs was huge in this game, by the way, for North Carolina. 9 catches for 126 yards.
Really good. And at the end on Carolina's final scoring drive, man, he made a catch along the sideline, a really nice play along the sideline, right? Makes a catch, gets out of bounds. And then he is in a screaming match with like two Duke defenders to the point where Wes Durham, who was calling the game on ACC Network, was in, and our friend Roddy Jones, friend of the podcast, Roddy Jones, they were like, you know what, Josh Downs might want to get off the field here, or like get back to the huddle before he costs his team. Because I thought for sure they were going to call a penalty on Josh Downs. Now, Carolina's coaches saw it, and they pulled him off the field for that play, like the very next play, which was smart to get him off the field. But Downs made a great play on the sideline, and then I thought for sure he was going to get flagged for taunting or a personal foul for unsportsmanlike conduct. I mean, he was screaming at two UNC defenders, and I was like, man, this is not – or I'm sorry, two Duke defenders. I was like, man, this is not what you need here going down the stretch trying to win a football game.
Right, right. Yeah, I mean, in a rivalry game, I mean, there's a lot of emotions at play. It's you know, a little bit heated. So, like, you understand how – people can let the moment get the best of them a little bit, but yeah, that was a dangerous spot to be jawing off and trying to get your verbal shots in. You're always walking the line of maybe getting 15 yards and costing your team something pretty important. So that's up there. But yeah, I mean, good win for North Carolina. Duke was good, and I think they continue to play well. Like, you know, they lost by 8 to Kansas, they lost by 3 to Georgia Tech, and now they lose by 3 to North Carolina. Like, even as a 4-3 team, like, they are a lot more competitive than I think we thought they would be.
Yep.
Words are going really well here. That defense plays well for Mike Elko, too. The coaching upgrade there on defense is visible, and I think they're going to be just fine going forward. I think they're going to make a bowl. They might only go, like, 6-6. I look at who they got left. At Miami, at Boston College, home against Virginia Tech, at Pittsburgh, home against Wake Forest. I think they'll get at least 2 wins there, maybe 3.
There's a couple wins there.
They'll make a bowl game, and that'll be a really impressive accomplishment there in year one under Mike Elko.
Yeah, I think you said Duke's defense plays well. I mean, eye of the beholder, they're a lot better than they had been. Like, a lot better than they have been. The one thing I'll say, too, is, like, Duke's been really good, and Elko deserves a ton of credit, and Riley Leonard's been really good. But my biggest thing is, like, this is more of an indictment for me on, like, North Carolina. I get it's a rivalry game, but they're in a freaking hell game against a first-year head coach in Elko, against a team that's been down bad for a while in Duke, and you need a last-minute drive there at the end to go and win the game. Like, and this is, like, a Mac Brown recruited team, a really, really good roster, because nobody's disputing the quality of the roster, a really, really good roster, and you're going back and forth with that Duke team that's nowhere near, like, the caliber of team that they're going to be in the next 3 or 4 years. Carolina's still got some issues, Joey. Like, they can score with anybody, but they still got some serious, serious issues. Like, that's my overall takeaway from this game.
Yeah, I mean, Carolina is 6-1, and 3 of those wins over App State, Miami, and Duke are by a grand total of 8 points.
Yeah.
So 6-1 is one thing, but it's not like they're totally dominating these games and really convincingly, repeatably winning them in a number of cases. So I don't know. I think there's an argument to be made that things should be better in year 3 under Mac Brown, especially with the way that they've recruited. And we can go around and around, and we've talked about this for years where – this offense is really effective, and they still have not yet fully figured out the defense thing. And I'm starting to wonder at this point, will they, and is that good enough? But kind of a weird conversation to have when they're 6-1 and, you know, leading the Coastal Division and ranked and in really good shape, honestly.
Yeah. Worst one loss team in the country.
At this point in the season, I'll take it. If it's me,
it's kind of becoming a shtick. Like, with them and with Syracuse, and Syracuse being the worst undefeated team left now, officially. But it's kind of shit, kind of not.
Kind of. Carolina 38, Duke 35. Mike, we can't put this off any longer.
Miami 20, Virginia Tech 14. Hokies covered, my lock hit. Just how I drew it up.
Big shout out to Miami for making that possible in the fourth quarter.
Miami's bad. Like, I'll hear any and all arguments of Miami, like, being a bottom four or five team in the ACC. They're bad. They're bad.
Ooh.
Not spicy either. Like, can
they
we name
look good.
Five? They don't look good. Can we name five worst teams in Miami right now, the ACC, definitively?
Five worse teams.
Definitively.
Than Miami.
Like, absolutely, Miami, without a doubt. Absolutely, without a doubt, worse than Miami. Name five. BC.
I think Virginia and Virginia Tech are definitively worse. Boston
BC,
College is
Virginia,
probably fair.
Virginia Tech.
I'm not... I don't know. We'll see what happens here in a few weeks when Miami plays Georgia Tech, but... I don't know. Like, I'm still worried that we're overinflating Georgia Tech on some vibes coming off of this, you know, first couple games with Brent Key. And then, I mean, Louisville has not looked good for most of this season. So there's that as well. But point taken is that Miami is average at best in the ACC and probably not even that.
They're in the conversation of being in, like, the below average category. They're in that conversation. Defensively... Mm-hmm. Defensively, they are some ass cheeks. Can I say that on a live stream?
Booty.
I'm saying it. They are some ass cheeks defensively and offensively. And look, if Virginia Tech had any offense whatsoever, we talked about this against Carolina too. Literally, any sort of offense, Tech could have beaten Carolina, and they absolutely. And I know the Carolina score was like 41-17 or whatever it was. They could have beaten Carolina, and they could have most certainly won this game on Saturday in Blacksburg, 1,000%.
Yep.
Like, this they is winnable. Have absolutely this was winnable. They fell behind against Carolina. Offense never got going, and then when Carolina plays from ahead with all those weapons, it's a long afternoon. But this game was absolutely, absolutely winnable, and Tech couldn't run the ball, and they certainly can't throw it. And they're just a bad offense. Yeah. And then, like, when they start making plays late in the game, it's like, okay, like, you're seeing some signs offensively. Like, I will say that, like, it's a bad offense, right? But you're starting to see some signs, like some plays here or there where you're like, okay, I see what they're trying to do, right, schematically. And you're seeing some guys, like, step up and make a play here, make a play there. There's no consistency, though. There's a penalty where you shoot yourself in the foot. There's a turnover, like Daquan Wright's turnover early in the game. Like, that fumble hurt because Miami went down and scored right after that, right? Like, there's just some stuff that Tech is doing, especially on the offensive side of the ball, that's really putting him behind the eight ball. And then they got to dig themselves out of a hole time and time again, and they're not good enough to overcome a two-score deficit or, like, even like a 7 or 8 point deficit. They're not good enough to overcome that right now. They're not good enough to overcome a bunch of penalties. They're not good enough to overcome like a missed assignment defensively, you know, where a guy gets behind the defense and makes a big play. And then you come back and like you readjust, but now your offense can't go score. Like they're not good enough as a roster right now to overcome the mistakes they're making. That's been the case all year. And there's some inconsistency. They were terrible in the first half. Really, really, really poor on both sides of the ball in the first half. Second half, I thought, played a lot better. I thought the defense certainly played better, and I thought the offense, you know, there were some signs there in the second half. But this is just not a team that's good enough to kind of overcome the mistakes that they're making where they're shooting themselves in the foot like they are. They're just putting themselves in really bad spots, and they're just not very good.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, they're not. And then, I mean, I just... We can talk about Miami's offense here for a second, too, because...
This is the bigger conversation, Joey. This is a bigger conversation because Miami is, like... Miami's a team to talk about because they were, like, real expectations with Miami coming into this year, right?
Yeah. Well, and all that money that you paid to buy out Manny Diaz and you pulled this coup out of Oregon to bring in Mario Cristobal and... You got the new AD, and we've got, you know, all sorts of NIL buku bucks and blah, 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 blah. And, I mean, Miami on their first four possessions of the game scored 17 points. It's pretty good. I mean, two touchdowns and a field goal on four drives. Like, I'll take that. And then after that, final drive of the first half, punt, seven plays punt. And then coming out of halftime, I mean, you're up 17 to nothing coming out of halftime. Three and out, five plays punt, six plays field goal, three plays punt, five plays punt, four plays punt. And not only that, Mike, but, like, Miami almost refused to run the ball. Like, they didn't even try it. And some of it maybe you understand because Jalen Knighton finishes this game as your leading rusher, 10 carries for 27 yards. Like, they weren't able to run the ball all that effectively, and I get that. But, A, that's a problem. B, from just, like, a game management standpoint, you're trying to put the game away, and you had the ball, like, seven times in the second half, and only one of those drives went more than 2.5 minutes. Like, good grief.
Yeah.
What is happening with this team? That is just poor game management. It was bizarre to watch.
It's just not a very well-coached football team right now. And, I mean, you're kind of seeing it week over week.
And it's not like they were starting from scratch coming off Manny Diaz. Like,
No.
They were fine before.
That's the thing. And, like, I mentioned this before, but, like, I'm starting to really believe it now that I'm watching Miami more, like, week over week and how they've kind of struggled over the last month or so. You can't tell me that Manny Diaz would have this team in a worse spot than they're in this year under Cristobal. Mm-mm. You can't tell me that. You can't tell me that this team would be a lot worse coached, a lot worse off record-wise. They wouldn't be playing as well. I don't buy it. And again, I think Cristobal in the long term, do I think it'll pay off better than Manny Diaz would in the long term? Probably. I mean, jury's still out, but probably. So I think it was the right long-term hire, but short-term, like, you're telling me that, and that doesn't mean you don't make the change, by the way. I'm just saying, like, with how poorly Miami's played, it's made me think about it, like, man, what would this team have looked like if Manny Diaz was the one coaching it this year? I'll tell you what, like, I think Van Dyke would look better. Like, and he hasn't been horrible the last couple weeks, but he hasn't played great all year. So there are some questions with Miami for sure. And I'm interested to see kind of where they go the rest of the season and how this kind of looks because the cupboard was not left bare. Like, there was no reason for this to be a year zero. And I tweeted this about Notre Dame last night after Notre Dame lost to Stanford. I said this, there was no reason for that to be a year zero situation at Notre Dame either. And I'm looking at Notre Dame and Miami in kind of a similar light where they had a coaching change, but they also had a lot of roster retention. And they shouldn't be as bad as they are. And I think they're both in kind of situations now where coaches are trying, the coaching staffs in particular are trying to explain it away. Like, we'll be better. Like, we're still kind of, you know, building something here. We're building a culture. We're doing this. We're doing that. I can kind of get it in Miami sense. I don't really get it in Notre Dame sense. But, like, they're both kind of in this situation where they're trying to, like, spin it in the media. And their rosters were pretty good coming into the year. So Miami's got to answer the mail at some point here and try to figure out really, like, what's going wrong. And, like, Cristobal, when he's trying to establish a culture, like, it's got to be going better than it's going right now in year one. Like, you can't be having a losing record to be talked about how there's going to be this vast culture change and everything, especially when you had a winning record last year under Manny Diaz. It's just,
when getting stomped by Middle Tennessee, like, this game being as ugly as it was against what Virginia Tech is right now, like, yeah, you, it maybe wasn't ever going to be overnight improvement, but, like, it seems like it should be better than this at this point.
Yeah, I mean, the floor should have been 8-4. Yeah. Right? Or 7-5 at worst, right? And, man, I don't know. It's,
well, and I'm looking at, I mean, they're 3-3 right now, right? So they got to win three more games to get to a bowl game. They're going to get there, right? Because their final six games, home against Duke, at Virginia, home against Florida State, at Georgia Tech, at Clemson, home against Pittsburgh. Like, yes, they should go into Charlottesville and beat Virginia, for sure. They should probably beat Duke at home next week, but I don't know how great I feel about that. Florida State, I think, will beat Miami, I think. And then after that, going on the road to Georgia Tech, like, that's historically been a total fallout spot if you lose to Florida State. And then you got Clemson, and then you got Pittsburgh at home, who is plenty game and could beat you. Like, there's a noticeable chance here that Miami finishes like 5-7 this year. And
oh, yeah.
Like you said, I mean, it could be a little bit of a rebuild, or, and you know, not quite the instant improvement, but like, that's not acceptable.
No. I mean, Miami fans are already sitting here saying, like, some of them anyway, are sitting here saying, like, yeah, the roster's clearly like not where it needs to be. And I'm like, what? Not Cam. Cam's not saying that.
Yeah.
Cam thinks it should be a lot better with the roster they currently have. But, because it should. And can they recruit better moving forward? Yes. And will they? Probably. Cristobal's been a pretty good recruiter. So I think they'll be in a better spot, like, roster-wise. I don't think this is the best the roster's ever going to be under Cristobal. But at the same time, like, with what's there, they should be playing a lot better than they are, for sure. Like, yep. There's nothing that I took away from this performance that made me feel really good about Miami, give me, like, the warm and fuzzies. No, not at all.
Right. Last thing I'll say here is, I at this point, I'm kind of at a loss for who to blame. But this combo of Mario Cristobal and Josh Gattis and the resulting offense, speaking of cheeks, like,
yeah,
something ain't great there. Something ain't working. And I don't know, you know, whether it's Cristobal, I don't know if it's Gattis, I don't know if it's the combination of the two, I don't know what it is, but something ain't working there. And we're going to have to see if that improves or if not. I mean, I think you give it another year, but... You know, you mentioned the whole, well, it couldn't be worse under Manny Diaz. I mean, Rhett Lashley leaving to be the head coach at SMU, like, it was always going to be a change to something, but
right.
Changing to this is not proving, workable or valuable at this point.
Yeah, and Michigan's offense hasn't exactly looked too bad since the Broyles Award winner offensive coordinator left. Like, they're rolling. So... Hmm. Just continuing to test that theory out.
There you go. Miami 20, Virginia Tech 14. As somebody had to cover, and Virginia Tech took that mantle and ran with it.
Y'all laughed at the lock, and here we are.
Well, yeah, it got there, and it was it was a little bit that SpongeBob meme of, you know, now let him have it. You can take it. Like, oh, okay.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Thanks, Miami.
Put it in the win column, baby. It still cashes.
Tickets cash. That's right. Mike, let's go to some awards.
Let's do it.
The Go ACC moment of the week. We were honestly struggling for candidates here. I don't think there were a whole lot of kind of ridiculous moments that stood out to me. The biggest one that I think I saw was it was somewhere in the third or the four, or early fourth quarter of Duke and North Carolina. Duke lines up, and they're pretty clearly going to run some sort of razzle-dazzle play. A little bit of a jet sweep action. Hand that off. It got flips off to another wide receiver and tossed back to the quarterback. We got a double reverse flea flicker, Mike. Pass gets thrown to a receiver behind the line of scrimmage and falls incomplete. And it is... I just laughed at that. It was like the most anticlimactic attempt at a double reverse flea flicker that I think I've ever seen in my life. So go ACC to that.
Just how they drew it up.
Yeah, just double reverse flea flicker, throw it in the dirt, and move on. Third down. All right. So go ACC to that, Duke. Good shot. And we'll try it again next week. We'll see how it goes. The Brian Van Gorder Memorial You Tried Award, Mike. I felt like this goes to both Miami and Virginia Tech in the fourth.
Oh, boy.
As Miami really, really tried to give that game away, and Virginia Tech really tried to make a comeback, and both of them in their own ways kind of failed. But they tried.
Yeah. They tried to do something.
They did. Yeah, it was an effort. An effort. A valiant one. But, we'll try again next week. So, hey, go get them.
Absolutely.
Mike, the Kobe Bryant Memorial Volume Shooter of the Week Award. Once again, we're going to go back to the well in Blacksburg. And Jalen Knighton, 10 carries for 27 yards. Malachi Thomas for Virginia Tech, 13 carries for 41 yards. To that, Mike, we say,
Kobe!
Kobe! There we go. You got it. You got there. Anything else on awards for this week? Anything else stick out to you as fun or funny? Ridiculous?
I mean, the one thing I just want to say is, with college football, there's just a little something for everybody. You know? If you want some really good football, you could, you know, watch Clemson and Florida State, or you could watch Florida, Tennessee. Well, that game actually was pretty good. What I meant to say was Tennessee, Alabama, Utah, USC. Or you could watch, like, NC State, Syracuse, or Virginia Tech, Miami. Yeah, it's a smorgasbord.
Yeah, that's really how you know how far down the well you are, is whether you're watching one of those games or one of those games.
Right. Or, you know, in me and Scott's case, you could be watching Hawaii at 2 in the morning on Facebook. Which, you know, or not even Facebook. Like, you know, some weeks you're watching Hawaii on some foreign app, which really just has, like, high school games on it. And then all of a sudden Hawaii comes on at, like, 2:30 in the morning. High school cheerleading, that's right. Which...
Absolute cry for help.
I mean... Look, we got to see if the bet cashes, okay? You got to have some late night action.
Right. Well, there's
sprinkle in a little bit. Yeah, you got to sprinkle in a little bit.
You betting spreads or totals in those high school cheerleading matches?
I'm gonna leave that alone.
You're the one that brought it up. You're the one that brought it up.
Always spreads.
Oh God. Team of the week, Mike. Who you got? We're still on the live stream. Don't get us canceled.
It's Clemson.
We haven't gotten to 100 subscribers
team
yet.
Of the week. Team of the week's Clemson. Actually, you know what? Fine. No, Joey.
You can have Clemson.
No. Team of the week is actually North Carolina, because you and I both had the over in various ways, and it hit. So team of the week's Carolina.
Got there with 15 seconds left. All right, go Heels. I'll take Syracuse, my team of the week.
Nice.
They continue to win. They're 6-0, man, just like we all knew.
Oh, yeah.
Player of the week. Who you got?
Oronde Gadsden from Syracuse.
Man, he had a great game, didn't he? That was really
good. He did, Joey. He finished with 8 catches for 141 yards, 2 touchdowns.
Yeah, that's fair. That's good choice. I'll take Drake May. I thought that he really lit up Duke. He had 450 yards and 3 touchdowns in that game. Combined passing and rushing yards, by the way. He was also North Carolina's leading rusher, if I'm not mistaken. He was really good. He did have a couple turnovers, not the best, but I'll take Drake May. I thought he was a huge reason that they were able to win that game, distributing the ball out and everything. By the way, honorable mention, shout out, Akeem Mezidor, 3.5 sacks in that game for Miami against Virginia Tech's offense. So, credit to him. That's quite the number to put up.
That is. Even if you are playing like an FCS offense.
That's right. Mike, that's all I got. Anything else on week 7?
Only 4 games, and we don't have that many next week either. So...
You're not even going to ask how our boys did?
Oh, I know how they did, Joey. They got that dub, baby.
Yeah, they did. Bowling Green. 17. The Miami Redhawks, 13. As Bowling Green, 3-4 on the year, 2-1 in the MAC. Is Scott Loeffler going bowling? Don't get us canceled.
He's going, not getting fired. That's what he's doing.
There you go. That's going to be a bold attempt he makes. We got 5 games left, all in the MAC. We'll see how it goes. Central Michigan, Western Michigan, Kent State, Toledo, Ohio. They might be able to get 3 wins in there.
It'll be fun to monitor on, like, Tuesday nights here coming up soon.
Sure will.
Just how's
don't
baby
lose
doing
like you did to Buffalo by 31 points. Baby's hanging in there. Baby's hungry. So I might need to get out of here and go work on that situation.
Yes, understood.
Yeah. All right, Mike, let's work on getting out of here. That's all we got on week 7. Fun week in the ACC for a short slate of games. We're going to come back and preview week 8. We do have some weeknight action this week. So we will be coming back and probably posting a preview by Thursday morning at the very latest. But Georgia Tech and Virginia playing Thursday night. And then we will have a slate of four games on Saturday that we will help get you ready for, as, once again, a bunch of other teams taking their bye weeks this week. So we will come back and get you prepared for that. In the meantime, come find us on Twitter. I'm at FTRSJoey. He's at Mike McDaniel SI. And together we're at BC Podcast ACC. You can send us an email with your questions, your comments, your concerns to the longest email address known to man, basketballconferencepodcast@gmail.com.
Nailed it.
Thank you. You can find us on YouTube. Once again, go search for Basketball Conference. Hit that subscribe button. We really appreciate those who are doing so. We are going to continue doing some live stream stuff there as well as on Twitter. So join us. We will try to give you some more advanced, heads up and kind of give some maybe keep a consistent schedule, even, is what I've heard people do sometimes. So we will maybe see how that goes.
Yes. We might have no choice but to have a consistent schedule, to be quite honest with you.
Might have no choice. We are on iTunes. We're on Spotify, all those good places you can go find your podcasts. And, Mike, where else are they going to be able to find us on the social medias?
Facebook, facebook.com/basketballconference. Rate, review, find some of our podcasts there.
Please do. Please do. And we're on Instagram, at BC Podcast ACC. And go find Section 103 on Instagram as well. You never know when a great deal is going to pop up. Even better than Go ACC, using promo code GOACC for 10% off your first order. So go check them out there as well. Mike, that's all I got. Anything else?
No, I think we're good.
I think we're good. Producer Scott has a nugget. Let's see how this goes. Ooh. We are, this episode will put us to a 100,000 plays all time on Anchor. So if you are the 100,000th download, thank you for your service. I don't think there's a prize, but maybe there could be. I don't know.
Yes, and I hear rumors that if we can confirm you're the 100,000th listener, Joey will host you in his house for a week.
That's what they're saying. That's what the people are saying.
That's what the people are saying.
You might be tagged into duty to help feed the kid or other things like that. But yeah, sure. Yeah,
it's literally all inclusive. That means you got to help take care of his kid. Kids.
That's right. That's what all inclusive means.
Kids plural.
That's right. Mike, this has been fun. Let's come back in preview week 8. How's that?
Absolutely.
All right. Well, until then, for Mr. Mike McDaniel and producer Scott, I am Joey Weaver. Thank you guys so much for listening. We will talk to you again soon. And until next time, go ACC.